Ray, thank you very much, Dr. Strickas. This is LJ Tan here, and I am delighted to have this opportunity to talk to you about the impact of the Affordable Care Act on immunization. I have a lot of slides, and I hope you had a chance to download them from the NIC online website. My intent today is to not cover every little detail on the slides, but I did want to give you a more complete package so that if you did have questions, hopefully some of the text that's in the slide will actually provide some answers to you. I hope that you all can see your slides. I think this is good. This is a disclosure slide that I have to give. I just want to let everyone know that I have no relevant financial relationships with the manufacturers of any commercial product or commercial services that I discussed today. I do not intend to discuss an unapproved or investigative use of a commercial product or device in today's presentation. And so with the idea that I'm going to kind of try to provide you an update on what is going on with the Affordable Care Act and its impact on immunizations, I think I need to go ahead and remind everybody that what it was like before the Affordable Care Act and what was access to affordable coverage like. So for many of you, you're probably remembering that the Affordable Care Act was, before the Affordable Care Act, most health insurance was voluntary. It was employer-sponsored, which then resulted in a lot of large gaps for the lower-wage workforces. There was employer subsidies were voluntary, and as a result, there was a lot of no assistance for low-wage employees with affordable health care. If you all will remember that with Medicaid and CHIP, which was available for certain low-income populations, there was no federal coverage mandates or options for low-income adults, whether they're childless or with or without minor children. We had Medicaid in existence for the elderly population, those over 65. As a result of these, we had a weak to non-existent individual market. It was unaffordable to many people. There were no federal subsidies to support affordability, and there was near total lack of access for persons with pre-existing conditions. And as a consequence, we had about 50, depending on the average you looked at, maybe 60 million people that were without coverage, and the number of people that went on and off the uninsured roll was about a third of that 50 to 60 million, depending on, again, what numbers you look at. With unstable insurance markets, what happens then is that it leads to discrimination against persons needing health care, both before or following enrollment into a health care plan. So what does the Affordable Care Act do? So the Affordable Care Act actually sets out an intent through legislation, and I think it's important to remember that that's what it does. It sets out an intent, and the intent is essentially this. It intends to assure a near universal, stable, or affordable coverage by leveraging existing public and private health insurance and improving existing public and private health insurance. So in other words, the idea of this Affordable Care Act was not to create something brand new, something different, but to leverage what was already existing and bring it together into more efficient processes, into better integration, and therefore result in better access. Now, note again that the intent of the Affordable Care Act was to improve access, and it's not necessarily to improve payment for services to providers, and I think that's important to remember. This was to improve access. It was not about improving payment. And so while if you improve payment, that will improve access, again, that was not the primary motivation. And so this intent was laid out through the Affordable Care Act, and HHS then enforces that intent through regulation. So what does the Affordable Care Act do for us? Well, firstly, effective January 2014, most Americans will be required to have coverage or to pay a fee if they don't have coverage. And the fee essentially is the greater of $695 per person, or to about $2,000 per family, or 2.5% of the household income. And if there are some exceptions, obviously, for financial hardships, for religious objections, and for persons for whom the lowest cost health plan exceeds 8% of their actual income. So there are exceptions to that fee. The other thing also is that there will be tax credits that are available and cost-sharing assistance up to people who are up to 400% of the federal poverty level of the FPL. And of consequence, I think a lot of us are hearing about this right now, is that employers are not mandated to provide coverage, but there are penalties if you don't do that. Again, remembering that we're going to hear a lot of arguments about that as the Supreme Court picks up discussion on the Affordable Care Act in the next couple of weeks. And so what happens with the private insurance and group health plans after the Affordable Care Act? And I think this is what we want to kind of emphasize. And what I've tried to do in the bulk of all the texts that are on these slides is that I've tried to redline or put in red format a lot of the things that are specific to immunizations, because I think it's important to first look at what we have with immunizations, but realize that these also come in the context of a bigger prevention network that the Affordable Care Act attempts to address and improve. So this is going to happen before 2014, and in fact, so it's already in place right now. And then there are certain things that are going to kick in over the course toward 2014, and by 2014, all aspects of the Affordable Care Act are supposed to be implemented at that time and point. So before 2014, the Affordable Care Act mandates provision of all ACIP recommended vaccines at no cost sharing. So this is significant. Essentially, what this will do now is say that all 190 million privately insured people will have access to all ACIP recommended vaccinations. It also mandates that adult children up to the age of 26 years who have no insurance will be covered. And from 2014, it is actually regardless of coverage. And so anybody, any child will have to be covered. And there, it eliminates any pre-existing conditions clause for children that are 18 years of age or under. Oh, sorry, under 18 years of age. The insurers are mandated now by the Affordable Care Act to implement any new ACIP recommendations, in other words, to start covering them within a year of the adoption of those recommendations by the CDC. Some will argue that that's still too long of a time frame, and I think and there's been a lot of feedback about that. And finally, this is a challenge for some providers, and the Affordable Care Act essentially says that no plan is required to cover vaccinations if it's delivered by an out-of-network provider. And obviously, in adult immunizations, that is a bit of a challenge, because if you think about the adult field, there are a lot of providers and a very diverse target populations to receive adult immunizations. And the concept here is that there are some providers that are considered out-of-network, and if they're considered out-of-network, then the insurance plan is not required to cover vaccinations that is delivered by that provider. And so there's a lot of discussion now with the payers regarding trying to include folks like, for example, pharmacists or community immunizers into the network coverage provided by that plan. And that's something that's a lot of negotiation and a lot of discussions happening around that right now. The good news also is that if you remember before the Affordable Care Act, there was this group of plans that stood out there. In fact, this group of plans covered a significant percentage of the U.S. population, the so-called ERISA plans or the self-insured group health benefit plans. The Affordable Care Act now essentially says that all the standards are now also extend to the self-insured ERISA group health plans as well. And in particular, what I'd like to point out is that all ERISA plans are now subject to the Affordable Care Act standards on preventive services coverage, and though therefore they must cover all ACIP recommended vaccines at no cost sharing. However, I think most of you have already heard this. There are some plans that are grandfathered in the Affordable Care Act. I think this results from the part, if you all remember, when President Obama says, if you like your plan, you get to keep it. We're not taking away your plan. And unfortunately, the way that translated into the language of the Affordable Care Act is grandfatherhood. And what that means is that there are some plans that if you don't do significant changes, you are grandfathered into the Affordable Care Act and you do not have to meet the requirements of those Affordable Care Act, of the Affordable Care Act, unless you violate some of these changes. And the routine changes that can be implemented are these that are on this list right here. These include, obviously, if you do a modest adjustment to existing benefits, if you change your plan to comply with state or federal requirements, if you change your plan to voluntarily adopt new patient protections established by the ACA, you will remain grandfathered. However, if you do not do that and you do any of these following things on this list, you immediately lose grandfather status for your plans. This includes things like if you reduce or eliminate any existing coverage in your plan, you lose grandfather status. If you require patients to switch to another grandfathered plan with fewer benefits, you will lose grandfathered status for both your plans. And the critical point, I think, to remember is that in 2011, about 50% of plans had grandfathered status. More than half of those are going to lose that status by the end of this year. And the smaller plans are likely to lose their grandfather status faster than the larger plans. Even though you're grandfathered in, there are certain things that you have to do as part of the Affordable Care Act. I've listed this here because I think it's important for you all to know it, but I'm not going to spend much time talking about this. For example, grandfather plans Still have to have no lifetime limits to their plans now. That's something new. They have to have no rescission. In other words, they can't take something away from you. And of course, includes coverage for children up to the age of 26. And of course, and you cannot deny coverage for children with pre-existing conditions. So I think all those, the top four bullets have an impact on immunizations as well. What about state-regulated health insurance? I think with regards to state-regulated health insurance, I think what we're looking at is the fact that all state-regulated non-grandfathered insurance plans must include ACIP-recommended vaccines at no cost sharing. I think you'll hear a lot about what are these so-called essential health benefits, and I think they're important, and I will have a couple of slides following just to kind of show you what they are and what's going on with essential health benefits. But I think it's important to remember that these 10 preventive services that have to be covered by the state health plans, including the exchanges that you've heard about that are going to come about in 2014, those are for prevention services, but remember, they're actually overwhelmed by the fact that we've got the fact that all state-regulated non-grandfathered insurance plans have to include ACIP-recommended vaccines at no cost sharing. So I think while you hear about essential health benefits, they're not really relevant for immunizations because all plans have to cover ACIP-recommended vaccines. But I wanted to give you a couple of slides of what's going on with the health essential health benefits, and this slide here essentially tells you what it is. And then I think most of you remember that in December 16th, HHS stated that plans must at least match the coverage provided by a benchmark plan that's selected by the state. So in other words, HHS kind of essentially moved that decision level of what should be in health, essential health benefits back to the states. And these are the benchmark plans that the state can choose from. They're on this list here. I wanted to provide this for completion, but again, to reemphasize, the Affordable Care Act trumps all that by stating that, again, all these plans have to include ACIP-recommended vaccines at no cost sharing. With regards to Medicaid and CHIP, I'm going to just quickly highlight a couple of things. States are now required to benchmark coverage to new and eligible enrollees, and there are going to be a lot more new eligible enrollees because effective 2014, all non-elderly persons with incomes up to 133% of federal poverty level are now Medicaid eligible. So they've increased the number of people that are going to be eligible for Medicaid benefits. And as a result, what you will see, obviously, is that it's increased coverage for immunizations for all these newly eligible enrollees. One of the things that many of you are aware of, or at least for the pediatric side, is this idea that as part of Medicaid and CHIP, the payment for administration fees have now increased to 100% of Medicare payment rates. And this is in place for the years 2020, 2013, and 2014, excuse me. And I think what this provides us is an opportunity to show the importance of adequate payment for administration fees on coverage. And I think that's something that we're very interested in following out as well. With regards to Medicare, I think it's important to remember that all Medicare beneficiaries will now receive a personalized prevention plan. And all cost sharing is eliminated for services under that said personalized prevention plan. So I think our goal here, obviously, is to make sure that all these ACIP recommended vaccines are in this personalized prevention plan. They're talked about, and as a result, they're going to be covered with no cost sharing because that's eliminated by the Affordable Care Act, and this is effective right now. Again, any preventive services received in an outpatient setting will also be paid at 100%. So if you've got immunizations provided in an outpatient setting, 100% coverage for Part B vaccines. And of course, then we have the big thing on Part D vaccines. A GAO study was just released in November of last year. Again, that study, while it was not the most satisfying for those of us who are very engaged in the difficulties between vaccines that are paid by Part D as in dog and versus Medicare Part B as in boy, I think it again, the study highlighted access problems with adult vaccines that are uncovered under Part D. And what the study does is to urge appropriate steps to address these administrative challenges of trying to verify beneficiaries' coverage under Medicare Part D, for example. Some of the other things the Affordable Care Act did was it reauthorized the 317 program. Another thing for adult vaccines, and we're trying to figure out how to leverage this to the best of our benefit, is that states are now permitted to purchase adult vaccines with state funds at CDC negotiated rates. And this may be an opportunity to create some demonstration projects as to how we can maybe provide where states can purchase adult vaccines at CDC negotiated rates and maybe in some way provide a replacement system to providers of those adult vaccines so that they can share in lower costs of that. And so that's something that may be we can leverage for adult vaccines. And I just received a request that I slow down. I apologize because I wanted to get through some of these slides, so I will speak a little bit slower. Thank you for that that information. So I'm going to end up by just kind of focusing on some of the opportunities that we can do with prevention initiatives with immunizations, for example. I think we want to make sure that we try to leverage our prevention and public health fund. I know that's under a lot of review and under a lot of scrutiny right now. So I think we want to try to go ahead and try to leverage what we have with that. I think we want to also think about community preventive services task force and how we can perhaps improve coordination, leverage that to improve coordination between the United States Preventive Services Task Force and the ACIP. I think there's a lot of discussion there specific with obviously Medicare Part D and Part B vaccines again, because the idea here is that the Part D vaccines are not covered very well, but what if we were able to somehow have the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force make a recommendation that they be covered? So those are things that we're all looking at the advocacy level to try to improve coverage of Medicare Part D vaccines, for example, would be some of the things we can do here. I'm going to skip this slide on community health centers. I think what we want to emphasize is that there's a lot of work in the Affordable Care Act to increase funding towards community health centers and to double the number of patients that are going to be served in community health centers. If that happens, I think we'll increase access to immunizations for millions of children and adults in the medically underserved communities. So I think this is something that we're very interested in looking at. And to wrap up, what can we do moving forward? And I think these are important considerations for all of us in terms of adult vaccines and adult vaccination, even though the Affordable Care Act is coming into play. I think despite the Affordable Care Act, I think we want to remember that about 24 million will still remain uninsured. So I think public health safety nets are still very necessary, and I think there's a lot of discussion about what that means with regards to the public health safety nets. So I think that is something that's important for all of us to think about. I think while we improve access for the newly insured, I think what we're going to have to realize is that all these newly insured populations are going to be disproportionately lower income and residents of medically underserved communities. And I think we need to figure out, are we really ready to address these underserved communities in our infrastructure for adult vaccines? And I think that's something we need to all think about as we go forward. Again, I mentioned this earlier, there's that potential lag time between when healthcare plans have to implement updated ACIP recommendations. And I think significantly, how do health plans implement our new ACA coverage? I mean, while all health plans are now mandated to cover ACIP recommended vaccines with no cost sharing, I think what we want to figure out is, while this payment may not be an issue, the adequacy of the payment remains. In other words, you know, how well are providers being paid for the cost of their vaccines, and also how well are providers being paid for administering the vaccines? So I think that is something we'll have to continue to pay attention to. With regards to continuing Medicare and the Medicare B versus D challenge, I think that's still out there. The GAO report highlighted that. We don't have a very good satisfying solution to this at this time and point. Medicare Part D vaccines remains challenged with regards to access to patients. And so we will have to continue to work on trying to improve that access to Medicare Part D vaccines. For a while, it was only shingles, but now Tdap is one of those vaccines that now fall into this unfortunate Medicare D dilemma. And of course, Medicaid preventive coverage for traditionally eligible programs, that's going to increase, and we want to keep thinking about how we can leverage that going forward. I think we want to realize that what the Affordable Care Act does is essentially move into prevention a lot, and we have now a completely new idea of changing the nature of community efforts. And I think in light of that, I think we're going to have to figure out how do we build immunizations into pilots and into demonstrations. That being said, I will note that none of the community transformation grants that have been awarded for immunizations. So I think that's, again, a reflection on the disconnect there, that while we're trying to emphasize a lot of care in the communities, we're not looking to see how we build immunizations into the pilots and into the demonstrations of how we're going to do that. So I think that's something that we're all trying to pay attention to a little bit. And so this is this idea of, again, what do we do with community prevention and public health organization financing and operations in this new arena of near universal coverage? And that's going to continue to evolve. And one of the things I want to bring up here is this whole idea of third-party billing. I mean, if someone is covered and goes into a public health safety net area to get vaccinated, how do we make sure that that coverage is reflected into that person's insurance plan? And I think there's the CDC's Billables project, for example, takes a look at that. And then finally, I think we all need to think about this, is how do we integrate adult immunization into prevention efforts? I think what challenges adult immunization is the fact that we don't have a solid infrastructure to deliver adult vaccines. No, so even as we say we want to make adult immunization a standard of care, and we say that the Affordable Care Act has now removed the payment disincentives, I think what we fail to recognize sometimes is that it still requires development of preventive care infrastructure to deliver those vaccines, and I don't think those are very good. And so maybe what we can all think about moving forward into the future is, what if we're successful in implementing an adult annual wellness visit? Medicare is doing that right now. And so whether we can do that for people under the age of 65, and this comprehensive adult wellness visit is paid for and covers immunization counseling, I think that's something we all need to look forward to as well in trying to make things improve. And I think I'm a little bit over my time. I apologize, but thank you. I apologize again for speaking so quickly, but I had a lot of materials, and I wanted to make sure that I could at least get some of it across. So Dr. Strickas, thank you, and stage is yours.